Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are speaking with Rizwan Virk. He's the author of Treasure Hunt, Follow Your Inner Clues to Find True Success. And Riz is a successful entrepreneur, angel investor, best-selling author, video game industry pioneer, and independent film producer. He currently runs Bayview Labs and Play Labs at MIT, a startup accelerator held on campus at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and he is a prolific Silicon Valley angel investor, having invested in many startups, including Tapjoy, Telltale Games, Discord, Funzio, Pocket Gems, Moon Express, and many others. And he's here today to talk about his latest book, Treasure Hunt, Follow Your Inner Clues to Find True Success. And he's also doing a contest where entrepreneurs who read the book Treasure Hunt can apply for a chance to win a $20,000 investment in their business. So stick around for more information about that if you are an entrepreneur or want to become an entrepreneur. So welcome to the show, Riz.
Thanks for having me on. Great to be on.
Thanks for being with us today. So you obviously are doing a lot in the world, and my guess is that you didn't write Treasure Hunt to make the thousands of dollars that come from writing a book. So what was your reason for writing Treasure Hunt?
Sure. I mean, you're absolutely right. I wrote this book as a result of my own experiences in the business world. You know, when I was a fresh graduate from MIT, I was very schooled in the left brain engineering world, and was, you know, taught to look for things logically, where cause comes before effect and effect follows cause. I started to have these different experiences during my very first startup, where I would have a hunch about someone or something, and later that hunch would prove true, or I would have see something about my business in a dream, and I'll tell you some stories about this a little bit later on. And then later that day, there would be something related to that dream that would happen. And so in some cases, effect seemed to be preceding cause. And so it really caused me to question, you know, this whole notion of time and space. The more I looked into quantum physics, the more I realized in quantum physics, you know, it's possible that information is coming from the future to the present, and from the present to the past. And so, you know, over the years, I had many of these experiences. I described some of them in my first book, Zen Entrepreneurship, which was about that first startup. But I started to develop a framework for, you know, I'm an engineer. I like to know how things work. I like to have step-by-step procedures. And so I developed a bit of a framework for how to work with intuition, with synchronicity, with what I call clues, which are the different, you know, could be a gut feeling, a hunch, etc. All of these little clues that we get in our own personal treasure hunt. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the old Indiana Jones films, like Raiders of the Lost Ark or Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And in those films, you know, there's always a treasure at the end. But wouldn't it be nice for Indy if he just got the map at the beginning of the film and all he had to do was just go there and pick up the treasure? But that's not how it works, right? Well, first of all, it wouldn't make for a very interesting film. There's always obstacles. But more than that, he has to follow the first clue, and that leads him to the second clue, and that leads him to the third clue. This book is my way of having our career and our lives be a metaphor for following the clues to find our personal treasure map, which is the set of things that we were sent here to do and that we feel like are part of our mission in life. And so the book really is a synthesis of all that I've learned over the last 20 years in doing startups. And my explorations into quantum physics, you know, and into dreams and into intuition.
Cool. Thanks, Riz. Now, what do you hope that the world will get out of, if everyone started following their own inner treasure hunt and listening to their intuition, what kind of world do you envision?
Well, you know, I think if everyone were to start following their clues, they would start to become more aware of not just their treasure hunt, but what their personal treasure is. And I think we all have themes in our lives, and particularly in our careers, which is, you know, what this book is about, that we keep coming back to. For example, in my own case, you know, two themes that have weighed heavily and that by following the clues I've found again and again, you know, one of which is this idea of bridging the right brain and the left brain. And it manifested in many ways. I make video games, which is a creative process. So you have to have the engineering side and you have to have the creative process. But also, you know, a lot of my work is bringing these spiritual ideas into the business world where, you know, we don't use terms like synchronicity, right? Or hey, I saw it in a dream. That's not always the accepted method to talk about this stuff. And so, you know, one of my themes has been being a bridge between these worlds. And then the other theme that I've had in my own career is helping others realize their dreams. And that's how I went from being an entrepreneur to being an investor in other projects. And so those are part of my personal treasure map. And so my hope is that as people tune into their own clues, you know, they'll begin to find those themes in their own lives and the work that they were meant to do that's based on their own strengths and weaknesses. I'll tell you a little story about a symbol that kind of played into my own personal treasure hunt. So years ago, I was in Boston, living in Boston, and was thinking of coming out to the West Coast and to California and trying to live on both coasts. Well, I was in my 20s. I didn't have any money, so that's not exactly an easy thing to do in those circumstances. And so I was, you know, pondering internally, you know, whether I should do this and how I could do it. And what started to happen was I started to notice mermaids everywhere, right? And now these aren't real mermaids, they're statues of mermaids. And turns out in New England, there's lots of statues of mermaids, like in seafood restaurants all over the place. But I had lived there for 10 years and I'd never noticed any of these mermaid statues before. Mm-hmm. And so that's an example of our intuition speaking to us. And the first rule of treasure hunting in the book is it unusual? And it was, because I had never noticed them before. And the second rule of treasure hunting is, does it repeat? And it was. It was repeating again and again. And then the third rule of treasure hunting is that these are very personalized clues. So I started to think about this mermaid clue and why my unconscious was being drawn to it and why it was a clue. And so as I thought about it, it came to me that a mermaid is someone who lives in two worlds, right? So there's the world of the ocean and fish and the world of humans. And so the mermaid is a being that can live in both worlds. And so for me, initially, it was a confirmation clue in the direction of living in the East and the West Coast. But then over time, it became a symbol for bringing these different Eastern ideas around meditation, yoga, and some of the yoga traditions, as well as synchronicity and dreams, into a more Western setting. And so that's an example of a clue that had multiple meanings for me, both in terms of what I was thinking about at the time, but also in terms of my bigger mission in life. And that's really what this book is all about. It's discovering your own purpose, the work that you were meant to do.
Thank you, Riz. So can we break that down a little bit? So you wanted to be bi-coastal, is that the word?
And, yep.
And then you suddenly started seeing these mermaid images that had always been there, but you'd never noticed before. So at what point did you start to take notice that maybe these mermaids were some kind of sign?
Well, it didn't happen immediately, right? The first time I noticed one of them, it was like, okay, that's interesting. And then I noticed another, and then I noticed another. And so, you know, part of what I lay out in the book is what I call the clue life cycle, which is a process, if you will, for thinking about how to not listen to intuition, but then also to come up with a framework for when to act based on an intuition. And the stages of the clue life cycle are, the first stage is intuition. And that's when you notice something odd or unusual, right? And I can't always tell you exactly what that means because that's different for each person. But the fact that I was noticing, you know, these mermaids was the intuition that there's something here. The second stage is interpretation, where I said, okay, if this was a sign, clearly it seems to be repeating itself, what would it mean? And then the third stage is confirmation, where you look for more aspects of the clue. And so these don't have to be followed in exactly this order, but this is a set of stages that can be used. Then after that, it's action. You know, can you take an action in a certain direction based upon the clue? And then you look for validation, and you see if the universe supports you in that quest or in that clue. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of good examples of this process. You know, in this case, the interpretation was, it was okay to be somebody who lived in this case, in both worlds or both coasts initially, right? But over time, it took on a deeper meaning for me, which was these different worlds. And then the action was to go ahead and start making preparations, you know, for moving out west. And then I found in that case, the validation was, it was right in the middle of the dot-com boom. It was very hard to even get an apartment in the San Francisco Bay Area. You had to give a resume, show your income, and I didn't have any because I had just left my first startup. But I was able to find, you know, through a friend of a friend, a room that was available in Mountain View, California, just down the road from Google, and also where I live now, coincidentally. But this was my first trip out there. And so, you know, things were opening up based on that clue and taking action. And that's when I knew it was time to proceed and go ahead with that.
Thank you.
Youth for Chinese Seniors is holding a fundraiser to raise $12,000 for a seniors drop-in center in the heart of Chinatown. This organization connects youth and low-income seniors to combat issues of gentrification, racism, and other barriers. Find out more about Youth for Chinese Seniors and donate at youcaring.com/seedsforlongevity between now and November 10.
Book and comic vendors will be gathering at the Goldcorp Center for the Arts on Sunday, November 5th for Broken Pencil's Canzine Vancouver Fair. The event runs from 1 to 7 and admission is free. Visit canzine.ca for more details.
So right now we are speaking with Rizwan Virk. He is the author of Treasure Hunt, Follow Your Inner Clues to Find True Success. And we're talking about the clue life cycle. And now what's the difference? You mentioned, is it unusual? Does it repeat? What does it mean to me? That's separate from the clue lifestyle, right? That's whether it's a clue or not.
Yeah, so the clue life cycle is a set of stages that each clue goes through, either formally or informally. You know, I encourage people to write down these clues and intuitions as they happen, because the pattern may be evolving over a much larger period of time, and that's a good way to kind of keep track of them. And again, using the metaphor of Indiana Jones, I don't know if you've seen Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade, where Sean Connery played Indy's father, mm-hmm. and he'd been he had this diary that he had with him his whole life. And every time he found a clue that would lead him to the Holy Grail, he would write it down in that diary. And then over time, you know, that quest became intertwined with his own professional career and his life. And in the case of Indiana Jones, with his son's life as well, as they went to find this treasure. And so, you know, the clue life cycle is a framework for when we notice clues, when we act on them. And the rules of treasure hunting are more general rules and questions we can ask ourselves along the way. And I mentioned the first three, which is it unusual? Is it odd? Second is, does it repeat in any way? And sometimes we ignore a clue, but it ends up being something that's important for us anyway. And so we wait for it to repeat. And the third clue is that it's very personal. The third rule, sorry, is that it's very personalized. Each of these clues is very personalized. And then there are different, you know, rules that come out throughout the book, one of which is that clues sometimes indicate direction, but not always timing. So our first interpretation about a clue may or, you know, may not be the correct interpretation. I'll give you another example from my very first startup. So we were about to launch the company. My roommate and I, we've been working hard. We've created this product. We've been up all hours of the night. And I ended up having a dream about a friend that I hadn't seen in a while. His name was Mario, and he had like left Boston in the winter to go live in Florida, you know, where it's much warmer. And so I woke up and I thought, oh, that's odd. Like, I haven't heard from Mario since he left 6 months ago. I haven't had a dream about him. It was just a random, not somebody who appears often in my dreams. And so I said, okay, that's unusual. Right. And so then I decided to wait to see if there was anything relevant. And it turns out that morning, Mario called and said, hey, I'm back in Boston from Florida. You know, I need a place to crash. What are you guys up to? So we let him crash at our place and we were showing him our product. And I said, OK, now it's repeated. So the way that I define a clue, you know, similar in some ways to the original definition of synchronicity, is that there has to be an internal event and an external event, and there has to be some connection, meaningful connection between the two, that may not be logically apparent. So in this case, you know, I had an unusual intuition and a dream about my friend. He actually called and showed up the next day, so clearly there was something going on here, some pattern that was emerging. Now, the interpretation is not always what we think it is, so I said, well, what could this mean? Well, you know, he's looking for something to do. Maybe what this means is he'll join us in our company and become, you know, a third co-founder or the first employee in the company. And so sometimes we'll interpret a clue and it may not be exactly the way things work out. Well, it turns out you know, he didn't really want to go through all the work of doing a startup and decided after a few days he wasn't going to join us. So it didn't quite lead in the direction we thought, but it was a relevant clue because he told us, well, you guys should really go to this conference in Florida next month if you're building this product. And we weren't even thinking of going. We didn't have any money to do it. So, but he kept insisting, you guys really need to go. So we ended up borrowing a few thousand dollars from my co-founder's parents. We went down to the conference, and that's where we launched our product, and we sold more than enough of our product to pay back, you know, my co-founder's parents and to launch the company. And it was a big launch. It was a very successful launch for us. And so that's a case where it was a significant clue. It was good to pay attention to it, but the interpretation, you know, wasn't exactly what we thought it was, but it led us in the right direction in that case.
Thanks, Riz. Now, I actually have a question specifically about that story, because you tell that story in your book, Treasure Hunt. But you also mentioned in the book that there was some kind of funny feeling or some kind of synchronicity that had happened about 6 months prior to this other thing happening. And I'm wondering, in that initial thing, did you write that down as a clue? Or when it came up again, were you just remembering that feeling?
Sure, it's a good point. And yeah, I forgot to mention that part of the story. So it turns out about 6 months before all this had happened, when Mario had suddenly decided to quit, we were working together at Lotus, which was a division of IBM now. And he said, well, I'm going to go off and do something else and go relax on the beach. And I had this weird, funny feeling at the time. And it was somehow significant that he was leaving this company to go off. And in his case, it was to go off and do his own thing and just relax. But it left me with an impression. Now, back then, I didn't have the terminology necessarily of clues or the clue life cycle formulated. But it left me with that funny feeling that there's always an internal sensation that our inner mentor is kind of pointing something out to us in the world. And it's the confluence of those two things that really mark it as a clue. And you'll notice I didn't really, you know, follow that clue at the time. I didn't do anything particular with him, you know, but within 6 months, I had left to start this other company with my roommate. And so when I had that dream about Mario and he showed up again, it was really the second instance in this clue life cycle. And clue life cycle you can think of as clues that circle again and again, because you'll get another clue that's related to the first one later on, and it may take you through a whole new life cycle. And so that's where – now you could say that, you know, because I knew Mario at this company, you know, and when he showed up, we thought about him joining us, and that's why it happened. The other way to say it is that when he left, the reason I had the funny feeling was because he was going to play some role in my own startup in the future. And, you know, the more you delve into quantum physics, the more you realize you can't distinguish between those two scenarios. What is the cause and what is the effect? And I really started to question this myself. I mean, that was one case where the dream, you know, happened before he showed up. I had another instance in that same company where it was a few years later. I had a dream about a competitor of ours. I think the name of the company was Edge Research. It's been many years now. And I hadn't thought of the guy who ran that company in over a year. In fact, we hadn't even heard of him. So we thought maybe he had disappeared as a competitor. And so I woke up that morning and I thought, that's odd. Right? I mean, I often have dreams about work, but I didn't have a dream about this particular person before. Why is he showing up in my dream and I haven't heard anything about him or his company in a whole year? So I went into the office and I got a call from IBM saying that, oh, just want to give you a heads up. We're creating this product. It's going to crush your product, but we just wanted you to know before we did the public announcement. And so, of course, I was upset that, you know, IBM, one of the biggest companies in the world, is going to try to crush our product. But more than that, I thought, well, how come I've never heard of this product? You're a big company. How could you keep this secret? And he said, oh, well, we bought that competitor of yours, Edge Research, about a year ago. And it was the same guy I had just had the dream of that morning. So, you know, that's when I really started to question our notion of time and space. Clearly, there was an event going on related to that competitor that was going to happen that day. And I was catching glimpses of it earlier. And so that's why I call synchronicity to be glitches in the quantum matrix, right? It's giving us glimpses of possible, probable future realities. And the tip that we're sensing this glitch is how we feel. if something feels off, you have a feeling of deja vu about someone or some place, and or so you see something that you notice something you've never noticed before, and again, you have that funny feeling. So it's our internal feelings and our mind and our consciousness that's actually the critical component in both this treasure hunt, but also in quantum physics. It's when you observe a particular particle that what they call the probability wave collapses to a specific reality that you happen to be in that time. In the physics case, it's a specific position and location of and speed of a particle. In our lives, it's more a specific set of circumstances that's going on with us and in our careers.
Interesting. Oh my gosh, I have so many questions about that. I'm wondering, there is a section in the book where you kind of imagine why you might send a message to your past self, but I'm curious if you've ever taken any physical steps as an experiment to try and send a message to your past self. I don't even know how you would do that, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look into quantum physics, the way that one interpretation of quantum physics works is that we, every time we make a choice, we end up branching into different parallel universes. And so you can think of it as like a dot that branches into two different paths. And then, of course, as we make more choices in each of those paths, we branch into even more paths. And the idea is that these future realities are all out there, and they're sending us information in what's called a probability wave back to the present. And we are sending from the present to the future similar kind of offer or probability wave. And when the two of those coincide, that which has the largest probability ends up being the path that we go down in this particular version of reality. And so the idea is that if our future selves are sending us information in this way, and how do we pick it up? It's the reality that we observe. That's why when people talk about manifesting the future, you know, one way to think about it is creating it. But I think a better way to think about it from a scientific point of view is to observe the future that you want to navigate towards, because we all have these possible futures, some of which are more likely than others based upon the choices we've made and based upon our strengths and our weaknesses and our mission in life. So back to your question then, if that model is true, and you know, one thing I learned at MIT about science is that it's a series of models and you use them as long as they're useful, then today we are sending messages back, you know, to our past selves in the same way, because we're one of potentially possible parallel realities. So, for example, I live in California right now and spent some time in Boston as well, and I'm an entrepreneur. I make video games. I work with filmmakers. You know, there's a lot of creative work, but I've had times when I've sensed an alternate version of myself doing something different. And like once I was driving by Stanford University and I had this vision that just kind of spontaneously popped up in my head of me as a professor, you know, teaching classes in computer science. Well, it turns out that's not totally out of the realm of possibility. I had seriously been thinking about an academic career, you know, when I was in school, but I decided not to go down that route. And academia is very strict. You know, I probably wouldn't be out writing books on synchronicity and dreams if I had gone down that path. But I sensed that there was a parallel me, which was a possible future self, you know, for the me from, say, 10, 20, 30 years ago. And so I think we're always sending messages. And it's really that funny feeling. I mean, I've had instances, for example, where, you know, I've walked by a building, and I just had this funny feeling about that building, and I didn't know why. And then a few years later, I would end up starting a company in that building, and I'd be, you know, sitting there looking out over, in this case, the building was in Mountain View, California, which is a place that I've been drawn to multiple times. And it's like, well, did I get the hunch because I was sending the message back to my past self? Now, I haven't necessarily, you know, tried to do that regularly, because I think it's happening all the time. But I do think it's useful sometimes for us to do an exercise where we tap into either a parallel self or a future self or a past self, and we try to see what images crop up in our minds. And the key is not to force it. I think if we're forcing, then we're getting into wishful thinking, and we're letting our own patterns determine, our internal patterns, both positive and negative, determine what's happening rather than really sensing these different quantum probable realities.
Cool. Yeah, I was just like, I have this image of sending messages to my past self of, you know, some of the big mistakes that I've made. But then that could mess up the whole space-time continuum, because part of why I am who I am today is because of those mistakes.
You know, I think that's exactly right. And so we have to count that the messages to the past aren't going to stop us from making the mistakes. There's a great story I tell in the book and about a Star Trek episode that I think really demonstrates that really well. Let me just jump into that real quick.
It's an
episode called Tapestry, right? And it's about the tapestry of our lives and the mistakes that we make. So in Star Trek The Next Generation, Captain Jean-Luc Picard is one of the main characters, played by Patrick Stewart. He's captain of the Enterprise. You know, we've watched him for all these years. And turns out when he was a young man, he had made a big mistake. He had picked a fight in a bar when he was a Starfleet cadet with these particularly, big and nasty aliens. As a result of this fight, he had gotten stabbed in the heart. Okay? And so his heart gave out, and they had to put an artificial heart in him. And he had always regretted that. And in this episode, that artificial heart is kind of on its last limbs, and he's sort of saying, well, I really regret, I wish I hadn't done that. And then there's an omnipotent being called Q in the Star Trek universe who says, okay, I'll send you back in time. So he sends him back in time to when he was a Starfleet cadet. And, the older Picard is much more cautious and thoughtful than the younger Picard was, who was brash and, wanted to make a name for himself and impulsive. And so he ends up not picking the bar fight. He actually walks away from it. And you think, okay, well, then things would be better off. So he comes back to the present, and he finds that he's no longer the person that we've been watching in the series. He's no longer the captain of the Enterprise. He's a lowly astromech person who's doing some astronomy thing. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but he's not fulfilling the mission in life that we know him to be really good at, which is to be in a leadership position in the starship. And it turns out because he had never been impulsive in his youth in this new timeline, he never made the mistakes, but he also never took the chances that led to him, getting command of his ship at an early age and becoming a legend within Starfleet. And so then he says to the alien Q, okay, let me go back and I'm going to do it all over again. And then when he gets stabbed, he smiles this time because he realizes that mistake is a key part of his life and his personal tapestry. And so that's why I think our mistakes are as an important part of our past and our mission in this life as our accomplishments.
Awesome. Hi, it's Marie. Thanks so much for listening. I'd love to know your thoughts on the show, whether you're enjoying it or if you have feedback on what might make it better, and especially if you have a story about how one of the episodes has changed the way you think or inspired you in some way. Drop me a line at spiritualshow.com. Just go to the Connect tab and fill out the form. It'll send me an email. That's spiritualshow.com. Thanks.
Sometimes it feels like the only thing you can count on in life is the fact that Mint Records will always have a Christmas party and always have it ridiculously early. This year, join Woolworm, Needles & Pins, Jay Arner, Supermoon, Kellerisa, and Dumb at the Astoria on December 2nd for music, presents, and Christmas fun.
We are speaking right now with Rizwan Virk. He is the author of Treasure Hunt, Follow Your Inner Clues to Find True Success. And I believe your website is zenentrepreneur.com?
Yes, that's right. Zenentrepreneur.com is the website.
Awesome. Now, I know you have a contest coming up. I do want to talk about that for every entrepreneur who is listening. But I also want to ask a little bit more about how you determine if a clue is a clue. Now, you mentioned, is it unusual and does it repeat? So what if you have one thing that happens that's unusual? Do you write that down as a clue right away, or do you wait for it to repeat before you put it in your book?
Well, I'd say it's better to just write it down right away if it's unusual and it might be a clue. Right. That way, when it happens again, which could be the same day, could be the next day, could be the next year, could be several years from then. Right? And so it's important that we write these down because that's a way for us to remember them. Then when it repeats, you know, you, this the second time, now the clue is a little bit stronger, right? And if it repeats again, it's a little bit stronger. And I said sometimes we ignore the clues, and they're, we're not supposed to, because there's something in them for us, because we have wishful thinking of what we want to do. I tell a story in the book about a woman who was in law school, and you know, she had used to live in the Pacific Northwest, I think in Seattle, or might have been Vancouver or Seattle. And she, you know, mentally said, hey, I have lots of friends there. I want to go and get an internship for the summer at a law firm in Seattle. But there's this other law firm in North Carolina that looks interesting. And so she ended up applying to like 39 law firms in Seattle.
Wow.
And one in North Carolina. And one by one, all the law firms in Seattle, you know, rejected her application. And there was one that wanted to meet with her, but they weren't able to coordinate a time. And meanwhile, the firm in North Carolina had given her an offer. And it was a case where she was logically pushing, because I want to hang out with my friends. You know, I want to go here. But the universe wanted her to go there. She ended up going to North Carolina and ended up working with you know, a senior lawyer who had argued many civil rights cases before the Supreme Court. And it ended up being a great thing for her and part of her path in her career and life. So, you know, sometimes we'll ignore a clue, but the universe will rearrange things for us to have to follow it anyway.
So it sounds, Riz, like the whole purpose of this treasure hunt and keeping track of the clues and paying attention to the clue lifestyle isn't to necessarily make sure that you have the exact right interpretation. It's more being open to following the possibility of a path that we hadn't considered.
Yeah, I think that's very right. It's about being open to different types of paths, despite, you know, what our so our intuition hopefully is leading us in the right direction, but sometimes our personal patterns can get in the way of that. And so we write down the clues to have a framework between the left brain and the right brain. And sometimes there's people who just follow things too quickly, and the clue life cycle can be used to slow them down until they get confirmation and bring the left brain into it to figure out what action to take. And similarly, there's people who never follow their intuition or always overanalyze things, and the clue life cycle becomes a way for them to not let their left brain interfere too much. As soon as they get the second clue confirmation, they should take some action or some interpretation, even if it's a small step in a certain direction, and then see, you know, where that might lead. So it's a way to kind of be open to different possibilities and for our minds to search for interpretation of those. I could tell another story that I relate in the book. There was a woman in Arizona who was one day about to get in her car, and she noticed a seashell in her driveway, which is odd because this was in the middle of the desert. And she looked around, she picked it up and she looked around, and then she noticed a second one. And so she went and picked that up, and she was about to leave for work when she noticed a third one. She said, okay, something odd is going on here. And so she took a picture of the seashells, and then she said, well, you know, what does this mean to me? And turns out the night before, or maybe two nights before, she had seen a movie about a pilgrimage. It was called The Way, which was about the Camino del Santiago in Spain and France. And in that movie, for some reason, she had noticed some seashells. And for some reason, they jumped out at her. So this is a case where, you know, she hadn't written that down. It was just something that jumped out to her while she was watching the movie. And then she saw these seashells. And she had been thinking of going on a pilgrimage. And she started to say, okay, well, what are the possibilities here? What is this clue trying to tell me? And she said, you know, it's to go on a pilgrimage, but she couldn't really go to Spain, which is something she'd wanted to do in that time. But turns out her daughter was going through a tough time right there in Arizona. So she took her daughter on a pilgrimage to Sedona for a number of days to kind of get her away from ordinary world and for herself. And then they had lots of other adventures there. But it was the clues that kind of opened up that possibility of going on a small pilgrimage, and that's kind of what she needed to do at that point in time.
Thank you, Riz. Yeah, I wanted to ask for more clarification. I'm glad that you mentioned how the clue life cycle can, if you tend to be very impulsive and take every little thing that passes by as a sign from the universe that you should quit your job or whatever, then maybe you want to take a little more time and slow it down. But if you're the other way and very rigid and analyze it to death until the opportunity passes, then you might, as you start paying attention to these clues, use that to feel a little more confident about taking risks.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, you don't want to do something stupid and just move to Italy based on one clue and quit your job and everything. On the other hand, if Italy has been calling you for some time and the clues rise in intensity, you then can start taking some action in that direction, and it gives you a framework to do that. There's also what I call anti-clues and patterns, and that's useful to talk about because I think, you know, sometimes in the spiritual world we say, you know, just follow synchronicity, follow the clues, any intuition you have, and everything will be all right. Well, we have to distinguish between what is a real intuition or a real future self sending us messages versus our own wishful thinking and our repetitive internal patterns. And so I'll give an example. You know, a few years ago I was on a radio show and this woman called in and she said, well, you know, I have this problem where I keep getting into these business relationships that I can't get out of. And I said, well, has it happened 3 times? And she goes, yeah, at least 3 times. I said, okay, that is an external pattern because when anything happens that many times, and we've known people not just in business but in relationships where they end up with different relationships but the same type of relationship, same type of person that can be destructive. And I said, well, you know, what does it feel like when you get into these business relationships? And she said, well, I'm really excited about the possibilities. I'm brainstorming new ideas, and I jump in and I sign the contract, and then later I realize I can't get out of it. And I said, great. So you have an internal sensation there, which is based on one of her strengths, which is that she's able to brainstorm new ideas with people, you know, she hasn't worked with before and get a positive working relationship. That's actually a positive thing. Turns out most of our patterns come from some strength of ours. But by doing it repetitively and unconsciously without thinking it through, it turns into a weakness. And so for her, the sensations of being excited and wanting to work with someone is the clue or the anti-clue in this case, that she should not follow the clue, but she should step back. And the first thing to do is to breathe, because whenever we're doing repetitive techniques or repetitive tasks or repetitive patterns in our lives, it's because they're just happening on automatic. We're making decisions like we always do. And the external patterns are related to internal patterns. And in the yogic traditions, you know, they talk a lot about this in yoga and meditation, about these clear sheets or kosas which surround us. And as we go through life, you know, every time we're afraid of something, we get attached to something, we develop these imperfections or these samskaras. And they build up, you know, within the field. And so as I looked more into this, you know, I realized that they had terms for all this stuff. And they even had terms for what I call patterns. They were called vasanas, which are tendencies that we go through again and again because of the stuff in our field. And that's why yoga and meditation can be, you know, so powerful, and taking a deep breath can be powerful because it helps to disrupt that. In fact, in the yogic traditions, yoga is not defined as the asanas. It's, you know, in Sanskrit, not that my Sanskrit is very good, but yoga it says yoga nirodha chitta vrittis. And what that means is yoga is the cessation of these vortices of thoughts in our field. So it's really about stopping all these weird deformations we make in our field, because then we can't see clearly. We don't see the cause and effect. We don't see why we get into these patterns. And so that's why breathing is often the first step before acting in this case, to let you know that it's an anti-clue. I like to say that our clues are kind of like dragons. And there's a great Chinese saying about dragons, which goes like this. It says that if you try to fight the dragon, it will defeat you. If you try to feed the dragon, it will eat you. But if you learn to ride the dragon, you can take advantage of its might and its power. And that's what, you know, learning to about anti-clues and patterns is all about. It's learning to ride that dragon, where in this case, she had a strength, which was this ability to brainstorm, but then she could introduce some criteria that says, okay, let's wait a week or two and I won't sign the agreement now. And that way she can still get into the agreements that, you know, seem prudent, but not get into the ones that are harder to get out of. And so it's a framework for doing that. And just as an aside, a few years ago I was in China in a temple in Shanghai, and I saw the statues of dragons, and they all had something under their claws. And I said, well, what's that? And she said, well, those are the pearls. So every dragon has a pearl that it's guarding. And I thought that was an interesting metaphor in that all of our patterns, which are like dragons, we have our pearl, which is our strengths, and we just have to be careful about how we use that and don't give it away.
I love that. Thank you. That's so helpful. I'm actually going to post this on YouTube before the interview airs. So if you're listening on the radio, this is why you should follow me on YouTube, youtube.com/spiritualshow, because I want people to hear about this as soon as is humanly possible. And I really appreciate the anti-clues information, because I feel like a lot of us have these repetitive habits, these negative habits that we get into. And it's not until we become aware of the precursors, the little signs leading up to that big mistake, that we can actually stop it.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. So becoming aware of our patterns first of all, that's tough in and of itself, right?
Yeah.
Freud once said the danger in self-analysis is that we're too satisfied with an answer quickly, and that happens when we analyze ourselves. That's why it's sometimes important to talk to other people, and they can see more clearly sometimes what our patterns are, because our own fields are so, I don't want to say deformed, but we've kind of twisted them in such a way that the light doesn't come in clearly. Kind of like seeing through cataracts, and the more we can learn to clear that up and become aware of these patterns, the more we can let go of the internal, the internal situations or the internal configuration that leads to creation of these external patterns. So, we're always creating results out there. Someone said to me, well, isn't the law of attraction always working, whether we want it to or not? And I said, yeah, in a sense, it definitely is. And if you look at the old ideas of karma, which is the law of cause and effect, every thought form eventually has an effect out there. So it's like this great engine of karma that's creating these situations for us all the time. But by being aware of how we're holding stuff internally, we can actually start to change some of what's happening to us on the outside.
Cool. I like that idea about asking friends, like maybe just saying, hey, are there any negative habits or patterns that I seem to do again and again and I'm not aware of? And just open and invite that conversation.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to do it, because your friends will have seen you in multiple scenarios, and perhaps they see you a little more, objectively than you might see yourself. And especially if you talk to different people and they say the same thing, well, then you're on to something there. There's a pattern there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because we can see it in our friends so easily. Oh, there's Bob doing that thing that he always does every time he gets, there's one friend I have who will get a new job and it'll be, or a new job or a new relationship or whatever, and the attitude is always, oh, this is going to be the thing that makes my life perfect. And then, of course, inevitably, a couple months later, reality sets in that nothing is perfect, and the person is not aware of the pattern. But until you invite that conversation, depending on your friendship, a lot of people aren't going to volunteer that information of, do you see what you're doing to yourself?
That's right. I think that's a perfect example, right? The new job or the new relationship, it always starts off the same way. And after a few months, it always ends up the same way. And so, but you're right. Not everyone's open to those conversations, but they're definitely worth having. And I think they're a key part of our personal, treasure map, which includes not just the treasure that we're there to get, going back to the metaphor of the Indiana Jones film, it includes the obstacles. Now, in his case, there were Nazis, there were people that were there to help him, and there were people that looked like they were there to help him, but really they were there to hinder him. In the case of our personal treasure hunts, yes, we have the different people that pop up in our lives, but our obstacles are often more our internal tendencies and patterns, and we have to find ways to overcome those in order to learn the lessons, that we're here to learn. And another aspect of the treasure hunt, so I gave the quantum physics explanation for these signs and clues. The more spiritual explanation or more religious explanations, are that before we're born, we have certain things that we were meant to do. And like in Chinese mythology, there's this goddess Meng Po that brews the tea of forgetfulness, which we drink, and then we forget all about what we were supposed to do when we get here. And so the clues are glimpses that are reminding us, we were meant to do this, or we were meant to talk to that person. And if you look at the work of Dr. Michael Newton, who wrote Journey of Souls, and Dr. Brian Weiss, who wrote Many Lives, Many Masters, when they regressed patients to before birth, you know, they both found the same thing, that there was this session that kind of lays out some of the major probable events in that life. And little signs or clues that were meant to remind us, you know, could be a necklace that somebody's wearing, or the sound of a laugh, or it could be the name of a company or a building or something that, you know, just draws us and we don't know why. And those are embedded in our unconscious so that when that event happens, the memory is sparked and we know that there's something significant here. So, you know, whether you have a more spiritual bent or a more engineering bent, you can take different explanations of these clues. And I found out that even in the more traditional religious world, you know, there's this idea of guardian angels who are sending us signs. And I was born in Pakistan, which is an Islamic country. And, you know, after I had written a lot of Treasure Hunt a few years back, I learned that there was actually a whole methodology for signs and clues within Islam. And it happened because my brother had moved back to Pakistan and he wanted to marry a Pakistani girl there. And it's kind of a traditional culture, so he had to ask her father for formal permission, you know, after they decided they wanted to get married. And the father said, well, I'm going to do istikhara on this. And he said, well, what's that? Right. And turns out there's a formal procedure for asking for a sign, an answer to a question from God, and you monitor your dreams and you monitor the signs over the next 3 days, and you see what kind of answers, you know, you are given. So even in the more traditional religious context, I think that there's a lot about these types of clues and signs. So depending on, you know, whether you're more religious, more metaphysical, or more engineering oriented, you know, there's a good explanation in any of those worldviews.
Tune in every other Sunday from 3 to 4 p.m. for Blood on the Saddle with your host, Dan N., for Real Authentic Country.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
Right now, we are speaking with Rizwan Virk. He is the author of Treasure Hunt: Follow Your Inner Clues to Find True Success. And you can find him at zenentrepreneur.com. And before we talk about your contest that's coming up, I just have one question. I need your help with something that happened last night. I have been kind of sporadically writing. I've got my little book of clues. So I've been writing it down. But so yesterday I was listening to a webinar that, you know, these webinars are usually to sell some kind of course or whatever. And sure. And I was doing some sorting and organizing as I was listening. And I discovered a significant amount of money that I didn't know that I had. And so when I found it, I was
That's always nice.
I know, right? I was like, oh, this is fantastic.
Money just showed up, right?
Yeah, magically. So yeah. I thought, wow. First of all, I thought it was amazing. But then I thought, okay, is this some kind of sign? If this course that the guy is selling is this amount of money or less, then I'm going to take this as a sign to buy the course. And it was the course was way, way more than what I had discovered. So I kind of let it go, but I wrote it down in the book. So from your life cycle, can we like break it down? Did I do it right? Or what would have been better?
Sure. Well, you know, there's no one right way to do or to interpret these clues. But I think the fact that this was an unusual event, right, that you found this money, makes it an intuition. So you're at the intuition stage. So there's a clue there about something. And the fact that it happened while you're listening to this particular show or online course is also potentially very interesting. So I think writing it down is a good first step. And then, you know, the next step is interpretation. But then, you know, look for confirmation as a third step. So your interpretation could be, yes, this means that I can afford to take this class or course. But in the clue life cycle, you have to look at your own personality and even though the Clue life cycle is the same steps, it's really meant to be a personalized GPS for each of us based upon our tendencies. So, you know, I think some confirmation is probably called for. And what is that confirmation? You know, it could be that you want to take this course. It could be that the direction that the course is pointing you in is a direction you may want to go on at some point in your life, but it doesn't have to be now. So it depends on your tendency. Are you somebody who jumps in and takes these courses
yes.
and spends money on these things too quickly? In which case, I would take a deep breath and say, is it a pattern or is it a genuine clue? And if it's a genuine clue, it will repeat itself in some other way. And if it does, then, you know, you can move ahead. That would be my personal way of thinking about it, if it were my clue. And that's part of what we do when we talk about these is kind of like dreams, where I don't know if you've been involved in a dream interpretation circle, but I studied with a guy named Robert Moss, and you know, the protocol that we had was always, if you were interpreting somebody else's dream elements, you had to start it with saying, if it were my dream, this is what the symbol would mean to me, which may resonate with that person, or it may be a completely different thing than what they associate with that. So I know it's not a clear answer, but I think there hopefully there's some there's some guidance there for how you might want to look at proceeding.
So it sounds like, just to clarify, it sounds like I would be served by writing down a little bit more information, like not just I found this money while I was listening to the webinar, but some points about what the webinar was about, what direction it might be leading me in. And then I have another right. question.
I'd say wait for some confirmation, and then that might help you pick the direction, then take action okay. rather than taking action now. Yeah.
Okay. Because what I had decided was, okay, this wasn't assigned to do this course.
Right.
But I decided, okay, for the moment, then I'm just going to put it into savings, which is a good logical choice. But I noticed that I felt really let down by that because there was this feeling of like, oh, this money is for something. And then when I just put it into savings, it felt kind of like a dead end. Is that do you ever notice those kinds of feelings?
Yeah, you know, it could be. An important clue, but it could also be part of that personal pattern where if there's a natural high in jumping into things, which is similar to my personal pattern, so I know it very well, you know, especially if you're talking about a big financial commitment, that's why, that's part of our you know, how we hold our energy, right? We get really excited about something, and then if it doesn't happen, you know, we start to feel a little let down. But that's where I'd say give it some time. In your case, only because you told me that you also have that kind of a tendency to jump in. If it's important, it'll come back to you in some way. And so I think that's, you know, that's what this clue life cycle is all about, is, you know, getting confirmation and taking a small action. You don't have to go all the way. Maybe there's something you can do related to the direction of that course, or watch something more from the person who's teaching the course on YouTube. You can take some other actions and then look for validation based upon that. So that would be my advice. Now, that's to somebody else, I might say something completely different because their tendency might be to not take these clues seriously, right? And so in their case, it's take an action, you know, more quickly and then see what happens, like take the class, because they don't do it often enough, right? And so that's why we have to develop our own guidance system. And, you know, even though, like, my GPS and my Google Maps is the same as your Google Maps and our phones with our personal GPS, there are different signs, internal feelings, sensations, different speeds, you know, at which we need to proceed. And sometimes a clue is pointing us in a direction. I'll give you another quick example of a story that I tell in the book, where there was this young man who had dropped all his classes in college in Oregon, and you know, he wasn't really satisfied or happy with them, and he happened to be walking at the edge of campus, and he noticed a flyer about a calligraphy class, and it just called out to him. So, you know, his intuition was saying, well, this is important. So he decided to take the calligraphy class instead of his regular, you know, science classes or whatever classes he was supposed to take. And during that class, he fell in love with these different types of fonts, the design, the serifs, you know, all the aspects of calligraphy and writing. Well, it would look like that is maybe a weird direction and not necessarily anything to do with career. So was it just a nice hobby? But turns out years later, when that young man, whose name was Steve Jobs, you know, was creating the Macintosh computer, he insisted on fonts being in the computer because of that calligraphy class. So it was a case where, you know, following that intuition led to something that was a larger pattern. I mean, we might be still typing on green screens today, right? If he had taken that calligraphy class. So that's where sometimes there's a larger pattern, and the clues, the dots, if you will, you can't connect them sometimes looking forward, but you can connect them looking back sometimes.
Wow, thank you. Riz, I want to be mindful of your time. Do you have time to go on and share about your entrepreneur contest?
Yeah, sure. I have a few minutes.
Perfect. Okay.
So with the launch of the book Treasure Hunt, I'm launching this contest, which is called the Real Life Treasure Hunt, Follow Your Dreams. And there's more details about it on my website at zenentrepreneur.com. And the idea is that I really want to use this contest as a way for people to follow the clues in their own lives for some dream project. Could be a business, a film, some other project. And I'll be investing in $20,000 in cash or in Bitcoin, which has become popular these days, into one of these projects. I kind of view it like a shark tank, but without the shark, you know, more of a spiritual conscious bent to it. And so, there's an application process that people can go through to write down, you know, what their project is and why they feel they've been called to do it. And the idea here is that, you know, I live in Silicon Valley. There's lots of venture capitalists and angel investors, but they only invest in certain types of new tech ideas. But I think there's a lot of other interesting, meaningful, spiritual, conscious projects out there that could use a little help, especially in the early days. And so I'll be investing, but more than that, I'll be helping, you know, the various finalists with getting their project off the ground. And I think, you know, that's important as well. I'll give you an example of the types of projects I'm looking for. There's a woman named Ellen McDonough, and she created an app called Pure Light Audio, which I ended up investing in and helping her getting off the ground. And turns out, you know, she has been working with a lot of these energy healers who have created these audios, which can be for helping you sleep, more concentration, and healing. And in her own healing journey, when Western medicine didn't help, these energetically encoded audios did. And so she felt called to create an app where people could find these easily because they weren't in one place and she had to hunt around to find these energy healers. And so that's a kind of an interesting spiritual project, which actually just launched on iPhone. It's called Pure Light Audio. But that's the kind of project, an example of a project that I'm looking for. But it really could be anything. It could be a crazy idea that nobody else is willing to fund. It could be a prototype for a small UFO, you know, whatever. Whatever the idea is that people feel called to do, I encourage them to one, buy the book, read it, and if the clues are pointing them in that direction, then apply to the contest.
Thank you so much for your time, Riz. And is there anything else you want to add before we close the show?
Well, you know, I just told a story about Steve Jobs a few minutes ago, and so I'd love to, you know, at the end of my book, I have a quote from him where he says, you know, don't let noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. Most important, have the courage to follow your heart and your intuition. They somehow already know what you truly want to become. And that's the essence of the treasure hunt and the treasure map, is that there's a part of you that already knows what you truly want to become. And that's what I'm hoping to encourage with this book.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much for your time, Riz. And thank you for listening. I look forward to hearing about your clues and the treasure that comes about if you read this book, Treasure Hunt. So thanks for being with us today. I want to send you lots of love. Be well. Namaste.
You are listening to 101.9 CITR. The computer has seized up yet again. That's quite all right. It's not the computer's fault. It's the computer's fault. It's actually the computer's fault. So what I'd like to do is a stall for a minute and a half. And I'll tell you about a couple of things. Shindig, this is the Parts Unknown show. This is a minute before the gala that is the Parts Unknown show. Tomorrow is Shindig at Pat's Pub. I forget what it's called now. I think it's like Hastings Street Pub, something like that. Peddling Art is November 10th. Don't really know what that is. The Mint Records Ridiculously Early Christmas Party is December the 2nd with S. Lord Efferman as the host. There is lots of great Mint bands like, Not Tough Age. I'm trying to think. Jay Arner, Supermoon, Woolworm, and others. The Access Gallery, Pivots and Spins is November 18th. The Mind Records, early Christmas parties, December 2nd of the Astoria. Canzine 2017. There's also Just for Laughs Alt Comedy Tour that's happening soon. So without further ado, might I give you the number here? This is 101.9 CITR. It is out of the Student Union Building at UBC, and this hopefully will be the Parts Unknown show.